Focus. I discovered you guys are all much more sensitive to that than I am. So. Okay, we've been talking about formal structural models of the retirement process. We did the Guffman and Steinmeier model last class, and today this will spend all the time on the so-called option value model of Rubenstein, Stock, and Wise. Although we'll get a small head start in thinking about dynamic programming models as well, because part of what they do is compare their preferred model to one that's still more elaborate. Basically, the theme of the paper is to compare three models of increasing complexity using exactly the same data. And just as a general point about doing research, the on the same data is a really nice feature of this paper. Because normally what happens when you try to teach a course like this is that you have researchers and models and data, and you hope that the differences in the conclusions are not due to the researchers, but you're never really sure how much they're due to the models and how much they're due to the data. Okay, so if you have model one estimated on data set A and model two estimated on data set B and they get different results, you're never really sure whether the results are due to differences in the model or due to differences in the data. And so it's a good idea, and it's a remarkably, yeah.
Today we have no.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's, you know, you wouldn't think this would be an issue. I mean, when you stop and think about it for a minute, when you're the second paper in the field, not only presenting your preferred model, but also kind of estimating or re-estimating earlier models on your data, would seem to be an obvious thing to do. It helps people like me trying to teach the stuff, because now we can compare model against model, holding data constant, which is in some sense the right way to evaluate the model. As you probably discovered from just earlier topics in the course, it's remarkably rare that one actually sees that. Oftentimes people just go off and estimate their model on their data and don't think about the poor 622 teacher who's trying to make sense of the literature. So having all three models estimated on the same data is, you know, it seems like something you wouldn't need to praise or you shouldn't need to praise, but it's actually unusual enough that it's worth emphasizing and saying, you know, yes, do like they did. Okay? A lot of the paper is driven by the data, so I'm actually going to start by the data and then talk about the models. Okay, the data that they have are from the personnel files of a large firm, which they don't name, that's part of their agreement with the firm, and the workers are non-managerial workers. They have company payroll records, which means they have excellent data on earnings, and they have the cooperation of the firm, so they know the details of the pension plan, probably better than the workers do. Okay. The details of this particular pension plan is that it discourages leaving before early retirement age. Okay, so if you leave before early retirement, the vested deferred benefit that you're eligible for is pretty unattractive. Okay. And then if you stay after 65, the increment to your pension benefits doesn't repay the fact that you're going to be drawing those benefits over one less year. Okay. And so basically, there's a big incentive to stay till 55 so you qualify for early retirement, and a fairly strong incentive to leave beginning at 65 because the pension system just does not reward work beyond 65. We talked earlier about there being different definitions of retirement, and here when they talk about retired, they mean leave the firm. Okay? The good news is they have very good data about what happens to you as long as you work for this firm. The bad news is they know nothing about you after you leave. Okay? So, Martin.
But that's a problem because it's like when they will model, I don't know the model, but when they will model their choice of going to retirement, people who retire don't think of just about that, but about missed opportunities.
That's particularly important for the application that they're going to have. So the part of what the paper is about retirement in normal times. Okay? And one can make a kind of, one can have a discussion with oneself about whether partial retirement jobs or omitting partial retirement jobs or not modeling partial retirement jobs is an important flaw in that context. They're going to apply it to an early out window, okay, which is a deliberate attempt to get people who are not really ready to retire, to leave. Okay? And so the early retirement window is going to induce people who otherwise wouldn't be retiring to leave early. And the question of what they do after they leave is kind of doubly important. Okay, so for the group of workers that they would be studying, normally, the issue of what happens to them after they leave the firm is potentially important. For the group of workers whose departure is being accelerated by the early out window, the issue of what they do afterwards is done. And you know, what this reflects is just the fact that we started out saying, here's a model, here are all the things we would like to fix about that model, and now we're going to watch the papers try to fix them one or two at a time. Okay, so this is one that, as you will see, is going to not do a very good job not going to do anything really about modeling what happens after you leave the firm, but it does a very good job with other things. And so it's a step toward a larger understanding of what an ideal model would be. Okay, so as I said, that this particular firm offered an early out window in 1982. So an early out window is not early retirement. Okay, so a typical pension plan has an early retirement provision. And that early retirement provision is a constant feature of the pension plan. Okay, so whatever year you reach age 55, you can pretty well count on you being eligible for early retirement, and you know, if you have the time and tenacity to work through the plan, you can figure out what benefits you'd be eligible for. Okay. The early out window is a special incentive that says we're particularly eager to get rid of workers this year. Okay, and if you agree to retire right away, we'll give you whatever the pension plan says you're entitled to, plus we'll give you a bonus. Okay, now sometimes that bonus will take the form of extra pension benefits. Sometimes it will take the form of just money up front, and for this firm it took the form of money up front. Okay, so 3 to 12 months of salary if you agree to retire right away, and the sort of high end of the bonus applying to people 58 to 62. Okay, so people who had reached early retirement but hadn't decided to retire despite the eligibility. And so here's the strategy. They're going to fit the data, each of the models, to 1980 data. And they're going to use these estimates for out-of-sample prediction. Okay, so they're going to estimate the parameters off of the data from 1980. And then they're going to use that to predict response to the window. Okay, and so that's a bit like what one often sees in other fields, where one has a data set there where you estimate the parameters. And then by the time the paper is ready to get published, there are two more years of data. And so you ask, well, how well would my data, would my model fit these out years of data? Okay.
So was this 1982, respectively, so.
No, no. This was one of the very first early retirement windows offered. Okay, so when this was offered, the authors are reasonably confident, and I'm reasonably confident, that it was not anticipated by the works. Okay. What's happened since is that, at least in some firms, there have been serial early out windows. So they'll announce, we're trying to get rid of workers. Here's the deal, are you interested? And people can sign up or not. And then 6 months later, they come back and say, well, if 3 months' salary wasn't enough, how about 4 months' salary? Okay, and in that context, once they come to be expected, when somebody rejects the offer, you're not really sure whether they're rejecting the offer is not good enough, or they're rejecting the offer because they expect something better to come down the road in a couple of weeks, or a couple of months. But for this firm, I think this was a sufficiently unusual departure from what firms as of that date had done. But I think it's reasonable to think of it as A, unanticipated, and B, reasonable to think of it as likely not recurring. So a worker probably wouldn't have rejected this offer because he or she expected a better offer to come next year. Okay, but for more recent data, that would be a real concern. Okay, any questions about that? Okay, so normally we start with the model and then go to the data. This morning we started with the data and went to the model. And the reason for that is because the details of what's in these models is really driven by the strengths and weaknesses of the data. Okay, so for example, there's a rather careful attempt at projecting future wages, future pensions, future Social Security benefits, and that's because these folks really have the data to do it. Okay, the Gussman and Steinmeier paper that we looked at on Thursday, for example, has really primitive information about pension entitlements, and they spent a lot of effort making rough approximations to what people are entitled to. Here, these folks can just gracefully look it up, and so they spend less effort and have, I think, much more reliable information. The different models reflect differing handling of uncertainty. That's part of what they're trying to emphasize. As Mato mentioned, there's a lack of data, and so a lack of a model for partial retirement. Okay, so there will be a state which is retirement, that is, having retired from this firm, and there's no explicit attempt to ask, does that reflect retiring from the labor force altogether, or does it reflect going across the street to this firm's rival and doing exactly what you've done before, or does it reflect something? Unlike much of the literature, the health problems that people often have as they get older and often lead people to retire are not explicitly modeled. Okay, so there's a sort of random term about which one is uncertain, and you can think of the health problems as being embedded there. But unlike virtually all the other papers in this literature, there's no explicit discussion of health. Why is that? Because all the other papers are run off of survey data where asking people about their health is an important part of the research project. Here they're basically exploiting company personnel records where they don't really know if you're sick unless you take sick leave. Okay, if you have some chronic problem that motivates your retirement, unless you're eligible for some sort of disability benefit, the firm typically wouldn't report it. Okay, so there's nothing in the personnel files and therefore nothing in the data set that they're using which tell them about the fine details of the health status of the workers. And so, as is always true when something isn't measured, its effect, such as it is a random term, in the air term. And so part of the air term, part of the uncertainty in the model deals with health problems that in other data sets might actually be measured, at least in some rudimentary way, and in this one not. Finally, I've never really had a chance to sit down with the authors and ask them whether the last assumption is because it's what they really believe is the right way to go or because it's the way they can implement, but it's different. The Gussman and Steinmeier model, remember, assumed perfect capital markets. Indeed, overly perfect capital markets. If you read the model literally, they let you borrow against your Social Security benefits, okay, which would get you in line for a pardon from President Clinton if you've actually done it. Okay? This model assumes exactly the reverse. that your utility in period T depends only on your inflow of income in period T. And so one way of imagining, thinking about that is I consume my income, which isn't terribly attractive. Another way to think about it is my utility depends on my income rather than my consumption, which is certainly not what you're taught in 601 or 602. But it's a basically a way of saying the idea that people can borrow and lend in perfect capital markets is really an exaggeration. And worse here, it would complicate the estimation. So it would be an assumption that probably isn't right and makes the analysis harder. Let's focus on something which has a little bit of, I would think, a folksy element to it, but makes the computations a lot easier. So whether sort of the authors actually, you know, if they had infinite computing power and a vast army of research assistants to implement their every whim, would they be making this assumption or the perfect capital markets assumption? I'm not quite sure. But they're making this assumption for some combination of the tractability it provides and perhaps disbelief in perfect capital markets, which is the other kind of reigning alternative, would be an appropriate assumption for this situation. All right. The title says three models, and you've been remarkably patient in not asking you, so what are the three models? The three models are listed at the bottom of the slide there. One is a simple Probit model. Okay, so the probability that individual I retires in year T is a function of their X's and an error term, and if X beta plus that error term is greater than zero, then I retire. The X's are kind of the usual suspects, meaning the wage, Social Security wealth, that is the present value of the benefits that I could claim if I retired today. The amount by which that present value changes if I delay my retirement by 1 year. My pension wealth, that is the present value of the pension benefits that I would be entitled to if I retired today. And then the change in pension wealth. Okay, so the amount by which that present value would go up if I retired 1 year later. And you can really think of this as both a simplified and a reduced form version of the Gusman-Steinmeier model. Okay, so remember when we talked about the Gusman-Steinmeier model, people were thinking about, you know, the increment to their compensation from working one more year and asking whether how that compared to the marginal utility of their leisure. Okay, so the Gusman-Steinmeier model is a much more complicated model, but it's fundamentally in this spirit of basically looking 1 year ahead. Okay. The option value model, which is the model that the authors are selling. There was a joke that in the Carter administration, if you were an advisor and you knew which option you wanted the president to select, you would always make that the option B, because sort of when he wasn't sure what he would do, he would sort of pick option B. Okay, well, option B here is the one that they're trying to sell you. Okay, it's the option value model. It's kind of mid-range in complexity between the Probit, which is relatively simple, and the dynamic program model, which is actually quite difficult. And the idea behind the option value model is that I retire now if the expected utility from retiring now is greater than the utility I can expect at any later retirement date. Okay? So while the Probit you can think of as comparing the utility from retiring now versus the retirement utility from working at least one more year, or working one more year, the option value model compares the expected utility from retiring now and compares that to the maximum of the expected utilities at later retirement dates. Okay, so if I retire in 1 year, what utility can I expect? If I retire in 2 years, what utility can I expect? If I retire in 3 years, what utility can I expect? Pick the maximum of those, compare that to what I would get if I retired now, and if retiring now is at least as good as any of those other options, then I should retire. The stochastic dynamic programming model is, to a first blush, subtly different, but actually, in terms of the complexity of the model, substantially different. What it says is, I retire now if the expected utility from retiring now is greater than the expected value of the maximum utility for future retirement days.
So what is it?
Okay? So the difference is here we're talking about the maximum of the expected value, And here we're talking about the expected value of max.
They are the same cap if you impose the probability of the function. Again, you see that the change in the cap of the relativity function is the change in the general.
Like certainty equivalence?
It depends also on the learning process. So let me come back to that. I'll give you sort of a simple example of where they would be striking. But one of the things it's going to depend on is sort of how the air terms line up over time. Whether you can learn, whether observing today's air term tells you something important about tomorrow's air term. Because then there's some gain from waiting until you can observe today's air term. But we'll come back to that. And we'll actually just talk a bit more about one of those as well. Getting to be the point where we roll up the sleeves here. So for that, the Probit model, really, I'm not going to say much more about it. It's kind of what we've been talking about, and it's really not what the authors are fundamentally emphasizing. The option value model is their preferred model. In terms of notation, T is my current age, R is some potential retirement age, S is just going to be an index for age, so when I'm talking about my age in general, I'll index that by S. There are a number of interesting notational choices in this paper. Y, for example, the notation A is so scrupulously avoided for age, is a bit of a puzzle. Y sub S is my earnings at age S if I'm still working for this firm. And B sub S is my pension plus social security benefit at age S if I retire at age R. Okay. So the idea that my benefit would vary with how long I work is an idea that we've talked about before, right? That if you retire before early retirement, the B of R is a very small number. If I work past 65, B of R may actually decline because I'm not compensated for the loss in the number of years that I'll be able to collect benefits. It's less obvious why B would vary with S, okay? Because most pension plans, once you retire, you get that benefit. Okay. The easiest way to see why it would vary is suppose I retire before age 62. I may be able to draw pension benefits from this firm immediately. But I won't be able to draw Social Security until I start at 60, until I reach 62. Okay, so suppose I retire, suppose my current age is 52, I retire at 55, my benefits would be just my pension benefits from 55 until 61, and then my pension benefits plus my Social Security benefits beginning at 62. Okay, so benefits would vary with my age for a given retirement date, as well as thing we've been emphasizing more, that my benefits will vary with my retirement age. Okay, and cap V of T reflects my rest of life utility at age T if I retire at age R. Okay, so I'm, say, 52, and I'm thinking about retiring at 55. This would be my utility if I retire at 55. I'm thinking about retiring at 56. This would be my retirement at age 56. V little t of t would be my utility if I quit right now. Okay? So that's just the definition. How is that actually defined? Well, here's where things get interesting. Okay. My utility as of age t, if I were to retire at some future date r, is composed of two pieces. One piece is the utility I experience while I'm working. Okay, so between my current age T and the last year that I work, I get some utility associated with working. And that's discounted by this discount factor D S comma T, which is actually my notation, not theirs. It's a combination of some discount factor to the, you know, raised to the appropriate exponent, and the conditional survival problem. Okay, so the assumption is if you're not there, you get no utility. And so your utility is discounted not only for time preference, but also for survival time. Combining those things is kind of a pain in the neck from a computational point of view, but for your understanding what's in the paper, there's not much point to distinguishing between them. Okay, so a 1% higher mortality risk and a 1% higher discount rate basically work the same in the model. Okay? So here's my utility in each year that I work. That's the discounted present value of utility that I get in the years between my current age and the last year that I work. Okay, once I retire, instead of getting Y, I get B. Okay, so the second term reflects the discounted value of my utility from the year of age at which I retire to cap S, which is sort of the oldest age I can imagine living to. Which I know for you guys is about 46, but you know, for some of the rest of this, it gets to be a high double digit number. Let's just not. And what's assumed is that my utility in those years depends on the retirement benefits that I get in each of those years. Okay, so notice that there's no C's here. We're not asking how much do you consume in each of those ages. It's just sort of what is your income flow in each of those ages. And that reflects, as I say, the kind of polar opposite assumption, the non-perfect capital markets alternative. Okay? Just for your own personal reference and how to make, when you write articles, how to make the people who teach them happier, using cap S as the upper limit of lower S works fine for those of us who are crazy enough to be kind of typing out slides at 1 o'clock in the morning. It's a real nasty notational choice if somebody's going to use try to teach the paper on the blackboard. Right? Because little S and big S look very similar if you write them on the blackboard. When you do this stuff, have the poor teacher in mind. Have in mind that you may be teaching this paper someday. Using this and this to mean separate things is really, it's a cute notational choice, but it really actually made the paper much harder. Okay, so we need now some explicit assumptions about what these two utility functions look like, and they make the simple assumption that there is a constant sort of utility of income while working is income while working to the gamma plus an error term. Okay, so the error term might reflect things like how much you like your job, how healthy you are, all that good stuff. And then your utility while retired is just your benefits raised to some exponent. And the factor K is meant to reflect the intuition that if you offer me a dollar's worth of wages or a dollar's worth of retirement benefits, I would prefer the dollar's worth of retirement benefits because I don't have to work for those. Okay, so we expect K is greater than 1. Okay, the utility that comes from $10,000 worth of retirement benefits is probably greater than the utility that comes from $10,000 worth of earnings, because I have to work for the latter. I don't have to work for the former.
Okay. So why you don't use that to the scam? You could use that to the scam.
Well, no, it's not through the discount factor so much, right? Because this is sort of present versus future. This is just a matter of do I have to work for the money or not?
Yeah, but that would be the same thing. It's like, because that would mean that you would more heavily discount, that's actually very similar to saying that you would more heavily discount the future after you start retiring. Or less heavily.
Yes. If I put it in the discount factor, though, it's going to differ not only between this segment and this segment, but it's going to get heavier and heavier the older I get. Right? So within this segment, it's going to accumulate the way discount factors do. And writing it this way, it doesn't. It's different in retirement and not retirement, but it's not different within the retirement period. That's probably it. If you wanted this to have some micro foundations, and I don't want to stretch the point, because these are kind of lowercase m micro foundations, you can imagine sort of a Cobb-Douglas function where there's leisure and income, and we let working correspond to leisure equal to 1, and we let not working correspond to leisure greater than 1. And so K then, so leisure to that exponent would be what we would call K. Okay, so this is definitely lowercase m micro foundations. I'm sort of trying to relate something that has a kind of folksy feel to it to the broader literature. Okay, they experiment with various forms for these error terms. But what they basically assume is that, first of all, what will matter is only the difference. So it doesn't bear a whole lot of thinking about components. And they make the assumption that this is a random line. Okay, so the piece of my utility which I can see and you, the analyst, can't, this year is equal to last year's value plus some fresh disturbance. Okay, we'll talk about that a little bit at the wrap up. And that just simplifies things just whole great deals, whole great deal, and given how complicated everything else is, that simplification is certainly involved. Okay, so now we get to the heavy lifting. G at age T of R is the gain at age T from postponing retirement to age R. And so it's the utility that I can expect if I retire at age R. The expectation is conducted at period T. Okay, I'm making the decision at age T. Okay, so that's the expectation conditional on the information that I have at age T. Okay, I ask, how happy do I expect to be if I retire over the whole rest of my life, if I retire at age R? How happy do I expect to be if I retire now? Okay.
You know, so you have the same index. Do you really need an expectation?
No, I don't know how happy I'm going to be, right? Because I don't know what the urge is.
Yeah, but I'm talking about a time T for the second part of it.
Well, it includes my error term at time T. So okay. Yes, time, it's a little high.
Okay.
R star is the value of R that maximizes this, and G is of evaluated in R star is called the option value. And basically, I will postpone retiring as long as the option value is positive. I'll retire if the option value is 0. Okay. Notice the last line of this. You're on your honor this time. You guys failed me miserably last time we tried to do this. So don't turn me on this page. All right. So the decision rule is keep working if the option value is positive, retire when it's not. Figuring out what that thing looks like involves a lot of ugly algebra, which actually has, if you make enough assumptions along the way, a relatively pleasant resolution. Okay. So while I am often inclined to say, well, it's in the paper, look it up. Here I've actually sort of tried to show you how it plays out and simplifies. So here's the expected value of my lifetime utility if I retire at age R, and that's just borrowed from the previous slide. Okay. Here's my expected utility if I retire today. It's just I get a stream of retirement benefits for the whole rest of my life. I'm going to rewrite that as one piece that reflects the current age up to R, and then another piece which reflects from R to cap S. Okay, now I'm going to subtract the second expected value from the first, because that's how I define the option value function. And the reason that I broke this up into two pieces is so I can subtract the first piece of this second term from the first piece of the first equation, and subtract the second piece of the second equation from the second piece of the first equation. So when I do that, I get the discount factor multiplied by here. This first term is the years between now and when I'm thinking about retiring. Okay, it's the years between age T and years R minus 1. And the difference between retiring then and retiring now is that if I retire then, I have earnings in each of those years. Whereas if I retire now, I get retirement benefits in each of those years. Okay, so this term reflects the difference between now and when I'm thinking of retiring, between the earnings I will get if I keep working, and the retirement benefits that I will get if I retire now. Here's the error term, which is just the difference between this guy, more on that in a minute. And then this last, so the difference in the first terms of the two equations are given on the first line, down here. And the difference between the second terms in the two equations is given down here. And what that says in words, or as close to words as I'm going to be able to come, is from R until I would eventually die. Okay. If I retire now, I get a benefit based on retiring at age T. If I wait to retire at age R, I get a benefit based on that later retirement age. Okay. So typically, this is going to be positive. If I postpone my retirement, I get a higher value of retirement benefits in each of those. And again, where we're headed is we want to ask whether this is positive or negative. Remember, if this is positive, I don't retire. If it's, once it becomes zero, I do retire. So now we're going to do a little notational thing. We're going to take the first summation here and the third summation. Notice those are all non-stochastic. Okay, they're just things that either one can observe, or we're going to pretend that they can observe because they can pretty well project. Okay, so the non-stochastic term we're going to call little g. This expectation of the stochastic terms turns out to have a nice simple form. And that comes because we've assumed that v follows a random walk. And so the statement, I retire at age t if my option value is non-positive, we have a sign error here. Yeah, this should be I don't retire at HT. So I keep on working if this option value is positive. Okay, and that's going to reduce to this relatively simple effect. Now, given how kind of hard we've worked to get here, it may not be quite obvious how big a simplification this is. Okay. So suppose you know survival probabilities. You can look that up in an actuarial table. And suppose you pick values of beta. Okay, it's the survival probabilities and the discount rate that determine this thing that we would call it D. Gamma, K, and the variance of here. Suppose I knew those four things. Then I could calculate this probability. The computer, it would grunt and groan. The lights in the building would probably dim. There'd be a lot of computing that goes beyond into that. Right? Because we're calculating present values of appropriately discounted differences between two earning streams. Okay, and getting those right requires a fair amount of effort. Okay, but conceptually, this right-hand side is a computable function of four simple parameters.
What's going to be?
Yeah? Okay. So this nasty thing is a computable function of three parameters. And then when I ask, what's the probability that it exceeds the random term, that is going to involve how big the variance of the error term is. Okay, if V were normal, that's just a, and if you read that off a standard normal table once you've done everything else. Okay. And so if I knew the four key parameters, I could calculate the probability that each individual would retire in HP. Well, of course, I don't know the parameters. That's why I'm in the business. And if I knew the parameters, they wouldn't pay me to tell them the parameters. Okay, so our job is to try to estimate the parameters. But basically, that just runs this process in reverse. It says, calculate the probability for each individual, and therefore the likelihood for the sample, for several parameters. See how that likelihood changes as I change the parameters, and use some maximization routine to find the values of those parameters that will maximize this likelihood. Okay, so there's kind of two steps in any of these problems. One is just seeing where does the likelihood come from and being able to at least imagine writing it down if one doesn't actually write it down. And then there's the question of how do you numerically maximize the thing? And the answer is you go to somebody in a computer lab who's good at that stuff and there's some routine that will do it. So, I mean, the computational issues of how to maximize this thing are not trivial, but they're not labor economics. Now, warning, this is the probability that I retire at age T. If I have a whole panel of data, then I've got to combine statements like this for different T's. And that's actually, you know, going to be, again, heavier lifting still. Okay, but the point is that they can estimate, and in fact, they do estimate the parameters off of a single cross-section. Okay, they ask, in 1980, at whatever age each individual is, do they choose to retire in that year? Okay, so they basically have one observation per person. They ask what happens if they include more and find out it doesn't much matter. Okay, that's in a separate group. But basically, they can estimate the things that drive their retirement model off of one cross-section. And as these things go, this is computationally not that bad. If you guys were motivated, this would be, you know, well within the range of what you guys can do. Whether you want to or not, you know, sort of would rather see the sun occasionally, it's a different matter, but as computational problems go, this is actually not that bad. Okay, in fact, I predict that some of you will do things that are at least in this complicated problem more so by the time you're out. If you're taking lists, of course, you probably already are doing things that work out. Okay? So why did I say don't turn the page? Don't turn the page. Now, we said that the comparison between this model and kind of the Guskin-Steinmeier approach or the simple probits more generally is that those models look 1 year ahead. Okay, so they say, what happens if I retire now? What happens if I retire next year? And if I'm not going to be any better off by working one more year, I retire now. Okay? So it's a comparison. Versus T plus 1, my current age versus option value, as we saw, looks at t versus t plus 1, t plus 2, and so on. So the question is, when would those decisions differ?
If you have like a rash adaptive expectation, that should be so.
No.
Or rash
decision? No. Well, I'll give you at least two examples where they're different. Can you guys think of that without turning the page?
Wait, would they be the same?
Would they be different? So why would I, if I look at just this year versus next year, okay, decide, say, to retire. But if I look at this year versus a bunch of future years, decide not to retire.
Maybe there's some information, like who knows, coming from renegotiation.
Okay, give me a, well, there's a particular, not even renegotiation, but a particular...
The normal retirement age and the early retirement age.
Yeah. So suppose the early retirement age is 55, okay, and you're 52. Okay. The Probit model says, well, what happens if I retire at 52 versus what happens if I retire at 53? Okay, in terms of the financial incentives, the answer is going to be not much. In either case, I'll have to take a vested deferred pension. In either case, they're going to be stealing from me. And so the reward for working to 53 rather than 52 is just not very large. Okay, so if my health isn't good, or you know, my spouse is nagging me to start taking vacations, or I don't like my boss, or it's just too cold to get up and go into work on days like this, I might decide to retire at 52. Okay. Suppose I took the option value and said, well, okay, I could retire now. I could retire next year. That wouldn't be any better. I could retire when I'm 54. That wouldn't be any better. But if I wait till I'm 55, now I get the early retirement provision, and I'm a lot better. So the gain to postponing retirement from 52 to 53 might be negative. From 52 to 54 might be negative. But the gain from going from 52 to 55 might be strongly positive. Okay, so the easiest example, the easiest in quotes example I can think of, is the decision before early retirement to keep on slugging through to early retirement will in many cases be a multi-year horizon decision, a decision that you wouldn't get right if you just looked 1 year ahead. Not unlike graduate school, I might add, right? You think, well, okay, I finished my second year. What's the reward from completing my third year? But if I complete my third year, I have the option of actually finishing and going on to get a fun job. I like getting up at 8:30 in the morning and teaching your graduate degree, okay? So you guys are pretty well, you know, if you're still here, you've probably got the option value idea, at least intuitively, right in the back of your heads. Right? You know, the reward from staying this extra year probably doesn't repay the rather extreme cost, not only in effort, but in terms of foregone earnings that you're suffering as a result. The reason you're around is because you realize if you hang around a couple more years and wear down the faculty member of your choice, he or she will sign your dissertation. And then, you know, you can go out into the wider world and have a higher earnings and a much more fun job either this year or next year. Okay? So that's the guts of the option value intuition. Okay? There are decisions that where postponing 1 year doesn't make me a whole lot better off, but postponing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years might. I said 2, 3, Rodney.
Let's get going.
Why meant it to include things not just graduate school, right?
Oh, no.
Well, we could be talking about PhD in other fields. Would that make you feel better? Like history. All right, the second thing that I had in mind is specific to this particular application, which is the early out window. Okay, so suppose I'm 55 now, I'm eligible for early retirement, and they offer me 9 months salary to leave. Well, if I think about retiring this year versus next year, it's pretty clear I want to retire this year. The gain from me turning that down would be to work one more year, and if they're offering me 9 months pay to leave, then I'm working for 3 months pay if I stay. So a 1 year ahead horizon would say, if they're giving you 6 or 9 months salary, you're out the door. Okay? But if you were 55 and you were thinking about working to 65, now you've got to say, well, retire now versus retire next year, that's a no-brainer, I should retire now. But retire now versus retire at 65? Well, now they're giving me 9 months of pay and I'm giving up 10 years that I otherwise would have wanted to work for this firm. Not so clear I should take the pill. So I'm thinking about an early retirement window. If you had a 1 year horizon, you would almost surely take it. Okay, but if you had a longer run horizon and you were thinking of retiring soon anyway, you would take it. But if the kind of optimum retirement date after this year was something 10 years in the future, giving you 6 months pay might will not be an optimal decision. Okay, so a probate person would almost always take an early retirement. An option value person might or might not, depending on what otherwise their optimal retirement date.
So from the firm's perspective, why would they offer higher bonuses to people who are closer to 65?
Probably because they desperately want to get those people out. I mean, the optimal design of these things is actually quite complicated. It depends. Well, it depends on a lot of things, right? In general, to induce somebody to retire, you think the younger they are, the more you would have to offer them. So if you were indifferent about getting people out at different ages, you'd have higher bonuses for younger people. And then there's the question, should you be indifferent about getting younger people at different ages? And then there's the question of how will the age discrimination law look at what you do if you offer different bonuses? And here it's really kind of bizarre, right? Because it's not entirely clear whether offering a big bonus to old workers is treating them nicely or nudging them out the door. There will be attorneys that will argue either position, no matter what you do. So it's a combination of at what age would you like people to be gone? What are the legal constraints and how do they restrict what you might otherwise like to do? Just as an aside, it turns out that in the real world, when these early out windows are offered, only about a third of the workers take them. And so the firm is really offering the window to a whole bunch of people and then taking its chances about who actually takes them up. And it's not uncommon to find that some of the people who take up the windows are people who are extraordinarily employable elsewhere and who you really would not like to lose. And they say, thank you for the window, and then if there's nothing in their contract preventing it, they go to work across the street to your competitor. The worst of all worlds is to stimulate some of your best workers to consider their options, and their options end up including working for your competitor. But on the other hand, if you really need to get rid of workers, if you're a firm which has lived off the notion that we provide a career, not a 1 year at a time employment contract, and now you find it's really optimal to want to get rid of some of the people that you induced to believe they can stay as long as they wanted to, well, then you've got to change their wanting to. And the way to do that, or at least one way to do that, is to throw it out. Okay. Now you can turn the page, and we just basically said what was on the page there. Okay, stochastic dynamic programming models. We're going to do this once over lightly. in part because it's really not the preferred model value-wise of selling, and in part because, you'll get another look at this in John Russell's paper on Thursday. So the option value compares the expected value of retiring now against the maximum of the expected values of retiring later. And then dynamic programming compares the expected value of retiring now against the expected maximum of retiring later. In general, the second, the one that dynamic programming focuses on, is going to be bigger than the one with the option value. Let me give you a simple example. Suppose that the gain from retiring is zero at all ages. Okay, so I'm just as indifferent. I'm just totally, you know, nudge me either way and I'll retire or not at any of these ages. Okay, so basically it's a total coin flip for me at any age. Okay. So the option value model then would say I'm indifferent about retirement. Okay, I have a certain level of utility now. I'll have that same level of utility if I postpone a year. I'll have that same level of utility if I postpone 2 years. It really doesn't matter. The dynamic programming model, on the other hand, would sort of put its arm around you and say, well, now think about this a little bit more carefully. Okay? And bottom line is going to be, in this situation, you should keep working. Okay? And why is that? Well, suppose you get a bad omega 2 plus 1. So suppose you keep working for a year. Either good things or bad things might happen, right? And on average, they should be work out to zero. If it works out bad, well, then you lose. Then you leave, so you suffer a loss. Okay, so suppose your health turns out not to be very good that year, and you kind of slug your way through it. Or suppose your boss you get a new boss, and that boss turns out to be a raging imbecile. Well, then you kind of, suffer the year, and then you leave. Okay? But suppose you get a good shot for working another year. Well, you not only get that good shot, but on average, you can expect good things to happen for the next several years as well. Remember the random lot process. Okay? And so, what the stochastic dynamic programming model basically emphasizes is that by not retiring, you have the option of sticking around if you learn something good in the meantime. Okay, that you'll know more about the future years next year than you do at this time. And there's some value to that additional information that you will gain. The option value model basically ignores that. And the stochastic dynamic programming model says, in a year you'll know more about the situation than you do. And so if you were just indifferent about leaving or not, stick around. Because if the information is bad, you can still leave. But if the information is good, you'll definitely want to stick around. You wish you had stuck. Okay, well, we'll talk more about that class of models Thursday, sort of working out my energy level to take this on. That's going to be a hard job. Okay, so when you actually estimate the option value model, what sort of things do you get? You get gamma less than 1, which I guess is what you probably guess. You get k greater than 1, although not estimated very precisely. You get kind of remarkably sensible discount factor. Right? That says basically an interest rate of 10%. And one of the underappreciated crises of people who try to estimate structural models is that oftentimes the discount factors that you get when you estimate them freely are just awful. You get discount rates of 86%. Boy, can I write you alone. Or zero, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so papers which actually estimate a discount factor freely and come out with sensible results are surprisingly uncommon. And I think, at least I don't have a sense of why papers in general often seem to have that problem. And, you know, this one kind of lands on the scene. And finally, there's the variance of the error term, okay, which in some sense reflects the relative importance of the unmeasured non-financial factors in people's retirement decision. And there's an estimate there, it's kind of true. Is that big or small? It's kind of hard to evaluate. But it's estimated reasonably precisely. Okay, so one question you can ask is, okay, I've got 1980 data. I know as of 1980 how much people have earned. I know what they can expect to earn if they continue to work for this firm, more or less. I know what their retirement benefits will be if they retire now or if they retire at some point in the future. Armed with all that information, how well can I predict who retires in the next year? Okay, and I have three models for doing that. And the bottom line turns out to be that all three models do about equally well.
So how does this comply with the critique of Lucas, because he said that this, I don't know, this seems like very problematic for me from the Lucas point of view, because he said that when you change the policy, like you change the policy, so people change their expectations, so you should not expect, they are rational, you should not expect that anything would happen.
Okay, well, so far we're still talking about the kind of normal policy. Okay, so 1980 was a normal year, not the year of the early retirement. Okay, so I think that's where you more have the Lucas problem is what happens once they offer the window and how does that change people's expectations. The storyline that they're going to want you to accept, I believe, which I think is probably okay in this application and maybe not as okay in other applications, is that this was really seen, that the window was really seen as a once and for all experience. And so it really didn't change people's expectations, although I'll talk about a subtle way in which it might have, even if it were a one-off. Let me come back to that. I won't answer it fully, but I'll at least touch on that issue, the way in which that would, I wouldn't have called it the Lucas critique, but actually you'll see it in the next slide. So for predicting who retires in 1980, which is normal times, all of the models do about it. But for predicting the response to the window, the two more sophisticated models do much better. Okay. And why is that? Well, we kind of let the cat out of the bag a couple slides ago, right? We said that if you're a probate person and they offer you 6 months pay to leave now, and you think about, do I want to leave now or work another year? You want to leave now. Right? But if you're an option value or a stochastic dynamic programming person, you say, well, if I leave now, I won't be able to work until 65 like I was planning to do. So I'll compare that 6 months of pay against not just working one more year, but it clearly wouldn't make sense to do so, but a whole bunch of the future years. And if I think about it that way, it's much less. Okay, so basically the option value and the stochastic dynamic programming models get right the idea that the window is not very attractive to people who were planning on staying a good while longer. And the probate model doesn't get that. And so the probate model basically predicts that everybody will want to leave. But basically it will over-predict how many people want to leave. And so what I think the paper clearly does is it shows that the kinds of sophistication that are in the option value or the stochastic dynamic programming models are really quite important for problems where the incentives become sharply nonlinear at one point in time, as they do, obviously, with the early algebra. I mean, to be honest, I'm surprised, given the early retirement accrual spike, that the probate does as well as it does. That is, I would have thought the probate would have had problems predicting that people would retire the year before, 2 years before early retirement, whereas the option value and S&P would tend to get that right, too. So I'm actually surprised that probate does as well as it does. But that's going to be fine. now let's kind of look back on what we've done here. First of all, to come back to the point that we made earlier, utility is depending only on current income. And the more I think about this, the more it bothers me. For most problems, the idea that people consume more or less their income is kind of depressingly true. An awful lot of people arrive at retirement with no assets other than their house. Okay? So the idea that people more or less consume their income, so that their consumption is equal to their income, so the utility of consumption is equal to the utility of their income, doesn't seem like that bad an assumption. But it's a little, sort of the rhetoric is not just right. When you're embedding that assumption in a model where people are thinking 8 years in the future about their retirement, but they don't think 1 year in the future about planning their consumption and asset accumulation. That sounds really weird. Okay, so if you tell me people are grasshoppers, they eat their income each year, that actually doesn't bother me. But to say, well, people are that way, but they look 8 years in the future about deciding how much they're going to consume, or when they're going to retire. That seems a little inconsistent. Okay, so the people who I know who consume their income are not people who I imagine look 10 years in the future to decide their labor force plans. And so there's a little tension between this assumption, which would be, I think, appropriate for people who are not very forward-looking, and the guts of the model, which actually relies on forward-looking behavior to give it its distinctive character. I mentioned before that little k makes sense if one thinks of utility as a Cobb-Douglas function of leisure and consumption. But only if you assume that those who are retired don't work elsewhere. Okay, so this gets to the point where, if you read the paper quickly, you might not notice that the issue of partial retirement was totally dodged. Okay, there's utility if I work here, there's utility if I retire, the utility if I retire depends on my benefits, that all seems sensible. Okay, but it's only when you sort of put this paper next to the papers like Usman and Steinmeier, where partial retirement is front and center, that you realize the partial retirement issue is really missing. Okay, and so in thinking about whether I should leave this firm, I should be thinking not only about my current pay with this firm versus my retirement benefits from this firm, but my current pay from this firm versus my retirement benefits from this firm and whatever I could earn if I go across the street. Okay, and it's kind of that,
so,
which is just not modeled.
Well, but that would mean that you would actually retire from that firm earlier.
Holding constant the values of the parameters, that's exactly right. Okay, so if we sort of had all of the parameters taking their true value, and then we said, how would someone who has the option of working elsewhere behave differently? The answer is yes, they would be likely to retire earlier. But of course, if we've got the model wrong, we get the parameter estimates wrong.
So
something else in the model is going to want to capture the fact that these people are actually retired.
So, but can you say something is like, were they, to what extent, like I expect that they should be less, not more?
I'm not sure which parameter it provides. I mean, one of the problems with these nonlinear models is that as soon as you notice something wrong, you don't have the intuition that you would have in a linear model about which parameter would like to bias. Okay, just to wrap up because we're running out of time. The zero mean innovations to the error term. This is the idea that the marginal utility of leisure increases with age. What's kind of strikingly missing from the paper is age or time as an independent determinant of retirement. Okay, so we don't have health in there. We let health be in the air term. But the air term is a zero mean. Taken literally, that means that if the air term reflects health, I'm not getting sicker as I get older. And while we would like that to be true, we kind of suspect it's not. Okay, so there's nothing in the model that's capturing the intuition that as people get older, on average, it gets harder for them to show up to work. This gets now to Mato's point. Even if I think that the window offer is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, okay, which is actually probably how these workers saw it, there's still the issue of how does that policy change by the firm change the expectation of the workers. And I think you could reasonably expect that the window offers would, even if it did nothing else, even if it didn't lead workers to expect another window offer in a year, it probably should revise their forecast about their earnings. I mean, a booming, vibrant firm does not say, hey guys, wouldn't you like to retire? Right? A firm that says, hey guys, wouldn't you like to retire, is probably a firm that's having trouble. If the firm is, in some sense, that desperate, is it likely to be giving 10% wage increases to the people that stay next year? Right? After having asked me politely would I like to leave in exchange for a small subsidy this year, are they likely to offer me the big bucks as a raise next year if I stay? Well, probably not. Okay, so the model assumes that this firm is a stable and stodgy enough large employer that if you know your earnings at 55, you can pretty well guess your earnings at 65. And whatever the reliability of that assumption in normal times, you would think that people might change their expectations about future retirement. In some sense, what would get you to retire in response to the window is a combination of the direct financial incentive, which is modeling, and the implicit bad news about your career prospects at this firm, which are not modeling. So suppose somebody didn't respond to the financial incentive of the window offer at all, but said, hey, this likely means that my remaining years at this firm are not going to be as golden as I imagined they would be. Okay, they might decide to retire as much for that reason as for the naked financial incentive given by the window, but the model sort of puts all the weight on the financial aspects of the window, and none on the, there's an implication here about what wages and life at the firm are likely to be like if I stay.
But if you're comparing, if you're just trying to compare the option value to the probit, and the probit said that too many people left, this would mean that more people would leave than would otherwise.
So you're right. If you're saying, does this bias the comparison between the probit and the option value, the answer is probably not. And so I guess my point is more, you know, how would you like to crank a little more on the option value model. And my sense is that this is a dimension at least you want to think about. But, you know, look, I got to say, having sort of complained about various aspects of the paper, the idea of using the window as basically external validation is an idea that happens way too infrequently. Okay, I mean, actually, Thursday's econometric seminar, if you have time, is about this set of issues broadly. All of our, you know, statistical tests are based on the presumption that I specify the model, have my research assistant estimate the model once on a short-term contract, and here are the results. Okay? What people in fact do is they sort of run the model, they notice something isn't working, and they sort of think, why is it not working? They change the model, they change the, you know, what variables are included, or, you know. So basically there's an interaction between the model and the data, which, you know, in some sense is not entirely unwholesome. But it certainly means that when somebody, after 16 tries, ends up with a T-ratio of 2, you've got to think that the possibility of this happening if the two parameter is 0 is really more than 0.05. Okay, if they get a T-ratio of 2 after 16 tries, it's not the same as the T-ratio in the textbook. And what people in other social sciences often do is they reserve part of the data. And then having sort of fiddled with the model the way we all do, estimate the, quote, final model on fresh data. Okay, and see, at least does it predict outside the sample, or is its ability to predict inside the sample just because I've sort of fiddled with it to line up with every quirk in the data that I happen to have. So the idea of using a completely different experience as external validation for the parameter estimates is a neat idea. You see it more in other social sciences than you do in economics. And it would be nice to see applications that are possible to do. Okay. All I'm still trying to figure out when we're going to meet on Tuesday. I need to do that. I need to find a time to talk to you about your paper. I need to give you guys a problem set. The Royal Shakespeare Company is here Tuesday, twice on Wednesday, and Thursday night. It's going to be a couple, funny couple of days. But starting on Friday, I come back up for air. So we'll do the Rust option, the Rust, the Econometrica paper in class on Thursday. Let's try for Friday and then with the option to cancel. I would feel better if I did. Oh, Friday doesn't work. Okay. I still have a question on that.